Hey there, folks. Welcome to Rock and Rally Tennis, where it's all tennis, all the time. I'm James Lynn. Follow us on Twitter at Rock and Rally. That's rock underscore and underscore rally. And on Facebook at facebook.com/rockandrallytennis. Rock and Rally Tennis podcast episode number 88 is brought to you by careerwonder.com, the ultimate career resource site featuring video interviews of professionals from a wide array of industries. Sharing the stories, journeys, and insights about their careers and jobs at careerwonder.com. While the year's final Grand Slam featured its share of upsets and surprises in the women's and men's draws, but certainly did not disappoint, a big congratulations to Sloane Stephens for winning her first Grand Slam singles title and to Rafa Nadal for winning his third U.S. Open singles crown and 16th Grand Slam singles title overall. You know, for the past couple of years, we've been talking about the transition atop the women's game and waiting for some of the promising young players to begin fulfilling their potential. And while we have now seen 23-year-old Muguruza win her first two Grand Slam singles titles over the past 17 months, 20-year-old Ostapenko and now 24-year-old Sloane Stephens win their first Grand Slam singles titles in 2017, the week-in and week-out consistency from this youth movement, particularly at the bigger tournaments, is what has been missing over the past couple of years. Perhaps we will finally start to see Stephens, Vandeweghe, Keys, Ostapenko, Muguruza, Svitolina, and others consistently getting deep into the second week of Grand Slams moving forward. You know, Stephens, who barely a month ago had not yet won a match in 2017, due in large part to an 11-month injury layoff, displayed an impressive newfound calm and measured play on her way to claiming her first major singles crown. It was this calm demeanor and mature gameplay that helped her reach the semifinals in Toronto and Cincinnati prior to arriving in New York. You know, since reaching the semifinals of the 2013 Australian Open before her 20th birthday, there's been great expectation for Stephens to win. You know, over the past 4 years, her performance has been largely inconsistent until this past month. The 11-month layoff from injury seems to have allowed Stephens and her team to congeal the necessary pieces of her game, physical, mental, and emotional. You know, when healthy and in full flight, Stephens' game features an impressive combination of athleticism, speed, and power, along with an exceptional ability to defend and seamlessly transition from defense to offense. Hopefully, this is only the beginning for Stephens. How she handles the added pressure and distractions of being a new Grand Slam champion, well, that remains to be seen. But I have a good feeling about Sloane. I believe she'll be just fine. As for Madison Keys, who also had to work her way back from a long injury layoff, there is no reason for her to hang her head for coming up one win short at the U.S. Open. I mean, Keys played some of the best and grittiest tennis I've seen from her on her way to her first Grand Slam singles final. She easily dispatched the tough Coco Vandeweghe in the semifinals with flat-out brutally good tennis, never allowing Coco to get into the match. In addition, Keys' tough three-set win over Svitolina in the fourth round showed a lot of fight and resiliency that will bode well for her moving forward. This U.S. Open loss, it's going to sting for a little while, there's no doubt, but she'll get over it. And barring injury, I believe a Grand Slam singles title is not too far down the road for Keys. For Coco Vandeweghe, it was her second semifinal at a major in 2017. You know, I've been following Coco for years. She's super athletic, has an excellent serve, generates easy power in her groundies. You know, the one area of her game I believe she will shore up over the next few months, especially, you know, working with Aussie great Pat Cash, is her net game. Specifically, the transition to net when she plays aggressively and has to make a good first volley. Now, to clarify, this is different from going to net off of an approach shot that is a virtual winner, where the first volley is an easy put away and there is little or no need to hit a second volley. If Coco is to continue playing this aggressive, moving forward to the net attacking style of tennis, she has to tidy up her footwork and volley technique, particularly on that first volley around the service line. She often loses her advantage when she goes on the attack moving forward to the net and hits a tentative, neutral, or defensive volley from what was an offensive position. You just can't get away with that, as the top players are simply too good. In any case, there's certainly a lot to look forward to regarding Coco. I believe she's really starting to come into her own. And a quick shout-out to Venus Williams, who at 37 years old reached the U.S. Open semifinals for the 9th time in her career, and continues to play some of her best tennis in recent years. You know, if she can stay healthy, there's no reason to believe Venus cannot win another major. Also of note, Maria Sharapova. She reached the fourth round of the U.S. Open, which I thought was a decent result for her, considering she had not played much tennis due to injury since rejoining the tour in April from her 15-month suspension. Now, Sharapova displayed her trademark fight in her opening round three-set slugfest victory over world number two Simona Halep, which arguably was the best match of the tournament. Now, there's no question as to Sharapova's mental toughness and will to win, but for me, it seems Sharapova's footwork was noticeably off throughout the tournament. Now, at 6'2", she's a tall player, and for a tall player, she has always had the ability to make those little adjustment steps, not a whole lot of them, but enough to get better spacing and set up for her shots. Now, she covered the court pretty well with her long strides, but I really didn't see much of those little steps in her four matches at the US Open, which cost her because she made a lot of unforced errors. You know, it's something to keep an eye on because in this era of power tennis, the ability to get to the ball with optimum setup and preparation is everything. As we've seen with Nadal over the past 3 or 4 years, any sliver of decline in mobility, quickness, or agility is all it takes to turn a high-octane penetrating shot into a relatively pedestrian one that opponents can more easily attack. In any case, it's something to keep an eye on over the next few Sharapova matches. For the men, you know, this US Open was already set up to be a bit of an odd one. You know, several of the top players were not in the tournament due to season-ending injuries, and you also had questions regarding the fitness of Roger Federer's back, which he injured in the finals at Cincinnati. Now, injuries are part of the game, and so is staying healthy. Despite being a longtime Rafa fan, I've got to say, I did not see this coming. I felt Nadal was actually a bit vulnerable heading into the US Open, especially after his losses in Montreal and Cincinnati. For me, it was more about how he was beaten in those matches than the simple fact that he lost. In both matches, particularly against Shapovalov in Montreal, Nadal's vulnerability with his backhand, which often goes cross-court and also lands short, was exposed. And I've talked about this at length in previous podcasts. Nadal has an excellent backhand, but the more he has to hit it during a match, the more predictable and greater its propensity to land short in the court. Now, during his prime, Nadal would camp out near his backhand corner, run around the backhand to crack his big lefty forehand. I mean, that style of play was very successful. But as his quickness and speed has declined a little bit due to injuries and wear and tear from his brutally physical style of play over the past few years, Nadal has become more vulnerable to getting pulled wide on that forehand side. So consequently, his forehand started lacking the same kind of bite and penetration as it had in years past. So what did Nadal do? Well, he adjusted his court position. So now, he's not as far over in his backhand corner, but in doing so, he now has to hit a lot more backhands during a match because his new court position allows opponents to find his backhand more often during a rally. And no disrespect to any of Nadal's opponents at the US Open this year, but the most accomplished opponent Nadal played en route to winning his third US Open was Del Potro, who, by the way, is the 2009 US Open champ. He knocked out Federer in the quarterfinals this year. Now, Delpo's a very tough opponent, but post-wrist surgery, he could barely hit his two-handed backhand faster than 65 miles an hour, and now relies mostly on slicing it these days. Plus, think about this. Del Potro was hitting more than 8 out of 10 backhands cross-court. Against Nadal, and on a reportedly slower hardcourt surface at this year's US Open, that's a recipe for disaster, as those slow to medium pace backhands from Delpo feed right into Nadal's lefty backhand. As I said earlier, injuries are part of the game, and Nadal has certainly suffered through his share of time off due to injuries over the years. The way the draw works itself out because of injuries, withdrawals, or upsets, well, you know, it is what it is. It's not any of Nadal's doing. So take nothing away from Rafa for staying focused and finishing the task at hand and collecting his 16th Grand Slam singles title. I still believe Nadal has a few more runs at major titles left in him if he can improve his backhand a little bit, especially the one going up the line. And he's going to need to, in my view, because in 2018, we're going to have the return of top-shelf guys like Djokovic, Murray, Wawrinka, and others who will be well-rested and healthy after having to shut down their 2016 seasons prematurely, I'm sorry, 2017 seasons prematurely due to injuries. For Federer, I just never got the feeling he was quite right physically at the US Open. His first two matches were actually very scratchy, and you could see he was not moving or bending well in either match, but he managed to eke out both matches in five sets. In his third and fourth round matches, I thought Federer looked much better physically and moved well in both matches. Now, against Del Potro in the quarters, well, you know, that was a bit of a head-scratcher for me. Although Del Po played well at the big moments, it was Federer's strategy of going at Del Potro's forehand and trying to slug it out with him that I found puzzling. You know, Federer made a lot of errors from overhitting shots, and his footwork looked really sloppy. I mean, Federer looked and played impatiently. It's almost as if he had somewhere else he needed to be and was trying to force the issue a bit too much. But, you know, in any case, only Federer and his team know as to whether there was anything physically off with him during his quarterfinal match. Federer, as usual, handles himself with class, and he's never used the health of his back as an excuse for his scratchy play. Even with the quarterfinal loss, it's been a great year for Federer, Nadal, and tennis as a whole. You know, anytime you can win one major, it's already a pretty good year. Federer has won two, and Nadal has now won two. You know, who would have thought coming into 2017 that the four majors would be won by Federer and Nadal? And on the women's side, two first Grand Slam champions under the age of 24. You know, I think tennis fans worldwide are pretty pleased with what has transpired at the majors this year. Here's to more great tennis moving forward. Well, that's all for this episode, folks. Thanks for joining us at Rock and Rally Tennis. Please subscribe to our podcast at rockandrallytennis.com. I'm James Lin. See you next time.